Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, good evening, depending on what part of the world you're in. I am really feeling really excited to moderate this call with Kaidi Keating. I had a beautiful opportunity to connect with her briefly a few days ago, and it's the first time that I've met her and spoken with her, and I was already moved by her experience. And so I will just share a little bit more before delving into the conversation. And so, as some of you might have read in the introduction, she is the creator of an incredibly inspiring book called The Light, published by the Light Network. And it's a book that's designed to help people reawaken their divine inner spark and live a more enlightened life. And so that's pretty inspiring, and I'm looking forward to reading the book. But I think what is even more, perhaps more interesting and inspiring is how the book came about. And so we're going to hear Kaidi talk more about the manifestation of the book. And she endured a life-stopping spell of depression. And in this period in her life, she was desperate to know what her purpose was. And one day, she just hit rock bottom. She looked up and asked the universe for a sign, and less than 24 hours later, she received an answer in the pages of a magazine. And this led her on a journey of intense healing. So Kaidi began to live her life purpose. And so I'm excited to learn more about your journey, as is everyone else on this call, Kaidi, including your guides, the white butterflies and the number sequences, and so many other synchronistic events that happened. So,
I'm
before
excited.
we learn more about that, I want
I was just saying, I'm really excited to tell everybody the story, and I'm very happy to be here on the call today, and so thank you for inviting me.
It's really an honor to have you and for you to share your time and presence with us. It's really a gift. And so I wanted to first begin by just creating a little bit of context. Can you share about your background, where you grew up and a little bit about your family?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in southeast London, in a county called Kent, which is known as the Garden of England. Very green there. And my family, I'm actually the youngest of four. So I've got like two older brothers and an older sister. And my parents, both, lovely people. My mum is a practicing Catholic. My dad never really was into any religion in particular. But my mum was always a very spiritual person, beneath the fact that she was part of a religion as such. She was always very, very spiritual. And so talking about who inspired me on my journey, my mum was very much a great inspiration for me.
Well, it's really interesting. I know that when we connected, you also shared with me a little bit about your childhood, a story in particular. And I'd love for you to share that with everyone else because your book, The Light, it's focused on helping others find their own inner light, and their own purpose, in this world. And what inspired that desire? Were you always this way? Did you always have this desire to help others?
Well, that was an interesting question that you asked the other day, because it just brought up this memory that I haven't had for some time. But my mum used to tell me when I was very young, she used to tell me about the Ethiopian people and how they were very poor and they didn't have much. And then I would remember that, and around Christmas time, I would start getting a bit concerned about the Ethiopian people. And I remember saying to my mum, you know, what happens to the Ethiopians? Will they get any Christmas presents this year? And she said, well, no, they don't have anything. They're very poor, but they won't get any presents. And I started feeling really sad for them. You know, the children mainly, because as a child, I was thinking of all the toys I was going to receive and very excited about that. And I knew that they wouldn't. So I would put aside some of my toys, like old toys I had, and I would give them to my mum and say, look, these are for the Ethiopian children for Christmas. Can you get them to the Ethiopian children? And my mum would like just smile and say, yeah, you know, that's really nice of you. I'll make sure that the Ethiopian children get them. but like I said, like back then, I don't think there was really that service to be able to get those toys to the children. So one day when I was about 20 or something, my mum pulled out this big black sack and it had all the toys that I had thought were going to the Ethiopian children back then. So it was quite funny to see all the little things that I'd, you know, put in there. So really, I think, you know, there was definitely something inside of me as a child that wanted to help and give back. But that really got lost as I got older, you know, just with the materialistic elements of life and the fact that I got more and more into this, you know, physical density of Earth. It sort of layered it and shielded that a bit. So I kind of forgot who, I suppose you kind of forget who you really are.
Yeah, I was, what struck me is I'm just imagining this child, you know, however old you were, 5 or 6 years old, with that wonder and that inspiration and the possibility, you know, you were moved by hearing about children in Ethiopia and you, at such a young age, you know, it doesn't occur to you that, well, it's not going to be possible to share your toys with them. You just were truly just share, you know, inspired from your heart. And as you described, that started changing as you got older and, you know, as we have more experiences in life that influence us and I guess I, in a way, take away some of our own, like, what realization or understanding of what's possible, or we tell ourselves things are not possible. So what I'm getting at is I know that you went through a pretty profound period of depression in your life as well. And so can you describe, you know, what brought on that depression and what you learned, you know, in going through that?
Yeah, sure. So that really happened when I was around 27, 28, that kind of age. So that was about 3-4 years ago. I was I had a magazine in Spain where I lived in England to begin with, but then I moved to Spain at about the age of 23, and I set up a magazine there for the expat community. And that kind of was going well and everything. You know, it was a very successful business venture, I suppose. But I just, after a couple of years of doing it, I realized that I didn't really want to do it anymore. And I didn't really feel like it was my purpose in life. So I invited my sister over, actually. She was still in England, but she came over to Spain and she took over the business. She still actually does that now. But at that point, I thought, okay, I'm just going to have like a few months off and, you know, I'm not really going to do much for a few months and just see what kind of comes into my life. But really nothing did. I did actually meet a man at that time, but that was kind of another part of life, I suppose. But I was really looking for my purpose still. I really wanted to know what I was here for and nothing was coming up. And I would try some other kinds of businesses and things, but they really weren't resonating and they just left me feeling more miserable. So this went on for quite a number of months. It went on for, I reckon, about 2 years, actually, in total, where I was really desperately searching for an answer. And I really felt like I was here for some big reason, like I think we all do. But it just wasn't, nothing was coming up at all. And I was getting frustrated. And it did turn into depression because I, you know, I remember times where I was just curled up on my sofa for literally hours on end and I'd just be crying, you know, just feeling completely helpless, useless, didn't think I was really here for any reason, didn't know why I was even here. thought, well, what's the point? You know, I wouldn't say that I was suicidal, because that's quite, you know, that would be a bit much to say, but I was kind of questioning the reason for my being here. So that was an intense period of my life, but it was also the one where I think I learned quite a number of lessons as a result of that. I think that we go through, sometimes in order to see the light or step into the light, we do need to go through that kind of dark spell, so that we have the contrast, and then we're able to, you know, remember the real reason why we're here. So luckily that did happen for me, but, you know, I think that it's different for different people how that happens, obviously.
Can you talk about the steps you were able to take in order to learn from that period of darkness? Because I think that, you know, in our world, a lot of people suffer and, you know, experience this darkness, and as part of that, feel alone, feel isolated. And, you know, learning more about your book, it's really fascinating to me, because it, to me, it makes me think that you're really in tune with yourself and in tune with signs. And it's hard to be so in tune when you're, you know, in depression. And so what helped you come out of that? How did meditation and changing your diet help you? How did, if you could first actually share a little bit about that, the spiritual practices and the, actually the physical that helped you come out of that.
Yeah, well, actually, I'd say the first thing that happened was that I kind of surrendered, and you mentioned that the other day as well, but how I did that was I kind of got to a place where I just had to accept. It's actually, I think, one of the first laws of spirit is acceptance. And rather than kind of looking and keep like thinking, being so mental about it, you know, like, why am I feeling like this, and when is this going to end, and all that, I just suddenly reached a place of acceptance. But more than that, I asked, and it was that pivotal moment of asking. I was completely present at that moment. I remember it so vividly, because I was so there. I was so in what I was in and just accepting it, but at the same time, realizing that now's the time to ask, you know, now's the time that I can't actually go any lower, and that I'm ready to move on and let go of this. So I did. I just asked God, I asked the angels, I addressed it to anybody that was up there listening, basically, any kind of relatives that had passed on. And then, like, 24 hours later, I was picked up this magazine that I never usually pick up. And I was looking through it, and there was this advert in there called the Mind Body Spirit Festival, which was about an hour and a half drive from my house in Spain. And, you know, I initially thought, oh, you know, that's a bit far to go, and all these things started coming up about why I maybe shouldn't or couldn't go to this festival. But there was also this very deep inner knowing that I had to go there. And I didn't really know why. And at that time, I wasn't even very much into spiritual subject. I was very slightly into them, but not in a big way at all. And my boyfriend at the time, he wasn't into spirituality at all, you know. he really wasn't. So but I kind of somehow persuaded him to come with me to this festival. And while I was there, I met a man who did something called cellular healing, where he would release negative energies from the body's cells, which would then free up all this space for like new energy, basically. I mean, it's quite a lot more scientific than that, but that's really the premise of it. And when I decided, like, these were kind of all funny signs that just started coming together. It was like I was very much being guided, and I just, again, I knew I had to go and see this man and have these sessions. And during the sessions, amazing things happened. Like, you know, I was releasing very heavy energies from the past. And I just felt, after the session, I felt so different. I felt very free. And then I started having what people would call spiritual experiences. You know, after the first session, I woke up with somebody whispering in my ear my name, an Alexandra, very much like a real person was there with me, but I looked around and I was alone. So I kind of knew that that was a guide or an angel that was trying to get my attention in some way. But that was really just the beginning, because after that, more and more things started to happen. You know, like I would leave my body quite regularly at that point and have experiences in different dimensions. And then the big one was that one night I saw like a huge sphere of white light in my bedroom. And it was trying to tell me something, but I couldn't quite pick up what it was saying. So I didn't really know it. It just then backed off and vanished. But the next day, it came into my head that I had to put together a book. And this book would basically have all the people in it that had helped me on my journey so far.
That's an incredible story. I almost feel like I'm watching a movie, you know, and hearing this movie play out.
It feels a bit like that for me now when I think about it as well. The same, yeah.
How did you believe it? You know, how did you not kind of disregard it, or, you know, think, wow, that was a really interesting thing that just happened to me, really inspiring. But you listened, you know, there was a voice, there was a calling, and you followed that. Was it something that you didn't even have to think about, or how did, you know, I'm just interested to know more about that process.
I didn't think about it too much, although, you know, it was a very strong knowing. You know, I suppose we all get that sense sometimes, and I have to say I hadn't really had anything like that happen before. I think a lot of it was down to the healing sessions I had, and I did start becoming a lot more intuitive after that in many ways, because all the old energy had gone, all this like stale energy that I wasn't needing anymore, you know, negative energy was gone, and it's like, you know, that I had the space then for this new energy to come in, and that was kind of where the intuitive side came from. Mm-hmm. But the only part of the voice that I didn't really listen to begin with was that it said that I had to do this book 100% for charity, and that all the net profit had to go to some charities which I could choose. And I kind of thought, well, that's not very logical. Like, how am I going to live? Like, if I'm doing this book and I'm spending all my time on it, how am I going to, like, also make a living? You know, because it's all for charity. So I tried to sort of change it and do half for charity and keep half, you know, just for me to be able to live. But that did not work out at all because, you know, it just wasn't flowing. So because I changed something, nothing was happening and nothing was flowing around it. So then I heard the voice again, and it said, no, this has to be 100% charity. It has to be. So I changed it back again, you know, to be 100% charity. And that's when all the magic started showing up. And, you know, the mind was trying to come up with this reason about how it was unreasonable for me to do that and for it to be 100% charity. But actually all of that side of things took care of itself in the end, I didn't have any need to be worried. I should have just really listened 100% from the beginning, and then that wouldn't have had any of those issues. So,
Tell us more about the book. I mean, you have luminaries in there like Don Miguel Ruiz and Barbara Max Hubbard. How did you even, you know, this idea comes into you? Your mind, and you feel this deep calling, you know, to see it manifest, to do what you need to do to see it manifest. How did you begin to, you know, make it happen, I guess, and talk to these luminaries and ask them to contribute to the book?
Well, it all came together very magically, and I, at the beginning, I didn't really think that I was going to be able to get any luminaries in there, like any kind of big names or best-selling authors. I wanted to, but I didn't really have the confidence to think, oh yeah, I can do that. But as the book started developing, more and more like people were coming into it, and it's almost like the vibration of the book was raising. Every time somebody new came in and said, yes, you know, I'll contribute a chapter, it was like this whole new energy was present, and it started feeling really amazing, almost like sparkly kind of energy. And that's at the point where some really interesting things started to happen. I can't even begin to tell the whole story because it would take forever, but these synchronistic kind of meetings that I started having with people, which would then lead to them knowing Don Miguel Ruiz, for example, and they would then say, oh, look, I know Don Miguel Ruiz, I'll ask him for you if he would be a part of this book because it sounds really great. And so that's really how it came together. A couple of the ones like, the bigger names as well, like Neil Donald Walsh, that came about in another kind of interesting way, because I was just actually in the middle of doing a completely different task on my computer when suddenly it came into my head that I should email Neil Donald Walsh. And that was it. It was just like a message that suddenly came into my head. So I completely stopped what I was doing. I Googled Neil Donald Walsh. I found his email address and sent this email off that came straight from my heart. There was no real mental kind of mentalizing about that at all. It was very pure and in the moment. And I got a response within 20 minutes saying, yes, I'd love to be part of your book.
Wow.
So it was very much about taking inspired action and realizing that, you know, now is the time, because it just came in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really also says a lot about the purity of your intention. And it's also what you shared about, that a part of you knew that 100% of the whatever the book earned was should go to charity. And you tried to change that, and it didn't flow. It didn't work out. So, yeah, I think that your story really speaks to the power of intention. But there were also some other interesting signs that served as guides, you know, along the way, you know, white butterflies, number sequences. Can you tell us about these signs along the way?
Yeah, well, the most interesting one to me was the white butterflies, and continued to be that way now. But I was having trouble with the front cover of the book. I was I couldn't really see what it would look like, and there was a designer who was working on it, but there was something kind of missing from the cover, and I didn't quite know what it was. And this went on for quite a few months, where I was getting very, again, a bit frustrated with it, thinking there is something that's supposed to be on there, but I don't know what. And then this one morning, I woke up from, you know, a deep sleep, and there was this whole swarm of white butterflies basically flying around in my awareness. I suppose I was still in the dream state, but I wouldn't say I really was, because I was kind of like half in, half out. I was aware of being awake almost. So it was a funny kind of place to be, but I remember seeing all these white butterflies flying around, and I just woke up like completely, and I just knew in that moment again that was it, that was my answer, and that the book was missing a white butterfly. And I didn't really know why, but as I started to think about it, I realized that to me, white butterflies represent transformation, they represent purity, they represent spirit in many ways, and you know, lots of other things as well. And so I just, again, knew and put one on the front cover, and then, you know, everything fell into place with that. But more than that, I started then seeing white butterflies everywhere I went. Like, literally, I would sit, not just actual white butterflies, which would fly around in the sky, but I also saw them just on things. Like, there would be white butterflies. Like, for example, I went to buy a handbag one day in this shop, got it home, and I unzipped it, and a white butterfly fell out that was sort of attached to a keychain, and I hadn't even seen it in the shop, but it kind of just like produced itself when I got home. I would see them in shop windows, like for the window displays, and I can't even begin to say how many places that these white butterflies would show up, but every time I saw them, I just knew that this was perfect, and that I was on the right path. And I would often question, even with all these signs that I did have, I would still often question, am I doing the right thing by putting this book together? Is this really what I'm here for? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And then suddenly a white butterfly would show up and kind of, you know, fly in front of me. There was one time on the beach when that happened, and it was the butterfly was flying in front of me, stopping on a pebble, and then it would start flying again. And it was actually flying towards the lighthouse, which is quite interesting. It was leading me there. So, yeah, these things were like just very, very, very miraculous to me.
That's amazing. How did your family and, you know, your close friends respond to all of this? Were they supportive? Were you able to share this with them? I mean, what was the reaction and response?
Well, I shared it with a certain number of people that I knew would understand. Like my mum, for example, you know, she really does understand all that and believes in angels and all of that side of things. Some of my family members I wouldn't really be able to share these things with, because they don't really, they're not really open to that right now on their journey. But yeah, I mean, more or less most people who I did tell, you know, found it quite amazing, really, the same as me, and they believed me, and I think they were just very intrigued more than anything.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the inspiration and the, you just had this volition and you just did the ask, you know, you reached out to people and you just asked to make this idea come true. And I want, you know, having gone through this, what do you think keeps others from asking, you know? Maybe, is it that they don't, well, before I answer my own question, yeah, what keeps people from asking?
I think that a lot of it does come down to confidence, and I think sometimes people might look at some of these like very successful, or what we might deem as successful people, who might maybe are best-selling authors, or you know, have a name in some way. They may look at them as being somehow superior to them. Whereas I found now that not to be the case at all. And actually we're all equal beings, you know, right down from somebody who might be like a dustbin man is of equal importance, equal spirituality, equally loved by God and everyone else for that matter, you know, is equal to the best-selling author or the very, very successful speaker or whoever it might be. So it really did teach me that lesson. And I think a lot of it comes down to self-worth, you know, why a person may not decide to ask. I think before I had these healing sessions, and before, you know, when I was going through this depression, and even before that, I would have fallen into that category of not feeling like I was important enough myself to ask, you know. But I think when that almost that divine spark was reawakened in me, I began to really feel that I was part of God as much as everyone else is part of God, and that we were all like the God energy. We can all create as much as anyone else can.
Wow. What parts of the book have moved you? You know, the main, I guess if you were to talk about the purpose of the book, like you described, it's to help people find their own light, to help people awaken their spirits. But if you were to share some insights, some stories that these contributing authors shared in your book, the parts that really moved you, can you share with us?
Yeah, well, there's a number that moved me. I mean, a lot of the stories in the book, you know, they tell a little personal story from the contributor, but they also, more than that, they're guiding the reader on how they can awaken their own light. And so it's more as well like techniques of things that they can actually apply to their life and do, so that they, you know, that's almost a journey, really, the book. It takes readers through this journey where, first of all, they have to prepare their body. And then it's like the practices that they would do to, you know, to awaken this light. And then it's the subtle energy experiences, which will come as a result of doing the practices. And the subtle energy experiences are things like what I was experiencing with, you know, with angels and seeing beings. But it was more just the fact that I was very connected to Source. And at that moment, you know, I still have experiences now, but I wouldn't say I have as many like that as I did in the beginning, because I think it was almost like a door had opened and all these experiences showed up at once. So it was a very moving time for me in many ways. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to the personal stories of some of the contributors, a dear friend of mine, Julie Chime, you know, she just talks about the time when she was almost stabbed to death, when she was actually about my age. So she was about 32 at the time, and she received multiple stab wounds. But in this moment of being stabbed, she cried out to her attacker that she loved her. And she actually cried out, "I love you." She went to a place beyond her body where everything was love. And so when she came back into her body and she was still being attacked, she was able to cry out that to her attacker. And almost stun her a little bit so that she stopped attacking at that moment. And I think that's the point where Julie was able to escape from the house. But that was a very moving story to me.
Mm.
For sure. But yeah, there's certain stories like that which really stand out.
Mm-hmm. You know, and what are some of your own daily practices that keep you rooted in your truth?
Well, I meditate every day. If I don't meditate in a day, I somehow feel like I haven't showered. Like, almost feel a bit dirty or something, but it's more like an inner dirt, obviously, like, not an outer dirt. Mm-hmm. But, so I try to meditate every day for about an hour, at least, because that really, really gets me connected with my higher self and with the soul. So that's a very important one, which I would actually think that most of the people on this call probably do that anyway, having listened to some of their stories and things, which were very inspiring. But yeah, I'm sure that a lot of the people on the call do that already. I also do very much watch what I eat. I try and eat all organic foods with a high energy. You know, I eat a lot of superfoods in my diet. And I think that's just important, because I think when we eat junky foods, it just, our energy, you know, our energy is very suppressed in that. And you can almost feel the energy of junky food. There isn't much energy in it, you know, not like natural life force energy. Whereas when we eat foods which are raw, organic, nutritious vegetables and things like that, then we naturally glow a brighter energy ourselves as well. So I think that's important. I mean, I do things like affirmations every day. You know, I say them to myself, and things that I'm trying to sometimes attract into my life. I always, if I am asking for something, which now I do regularly, I ask for the highest good of myself and everyone else concerned, because I think that's important. There might be something that we want in our lives, but it might not be the right time in our destiny for that to happen. But also, it might not be for the best for everyone else concerned either. So I think as long as we're asking from a place of pure light, that it is for the best of everyone, then that's more likely that it will manifest in the right time. So just loving, I think love is obviously the highest vibration on the planet. So I always try to just send love to people I know throughout the day. I kind of imagine just a soft pink light shooting from my heart to their heart. You know, that I think is very powerful. And the place of love, you know, manifest, when you're in that place of love, you're able to manifest far easier as well. So they're just some of the few things, you know, some of the many things actually, which are described in the book. Gratitude is another big one, which I'm sure that many listeners will already know about, but I do actually have a gratitude journal, and at the end of each day I write down 5 things that I'm grateful for that happened in that day. That keeps me in that place of feeling joy in my life, even maybe when I haven't had such a good day, I'm able to find the blessings in it.
Were there a lot of
Oh,
there's
Bella, do you mind if
Oh,
we
sure, go.
open it for Q&A and then maybe you can ask your question? So I'm going to open the Q&A session. So if anyone has a question or if they want to share something, just hit star six and you will be put in the queue. Okay, Bella, you can go ahead.
Okay. There can be a lot of excitement that comes when you arrive at a moment of clarity about your life purpose and how to make that happen, but the actual implementation of a vision comes with a lot of ups and downs and can be a journey in itself. And so can you share about that, during this the process of making helping the book to manifest, and even now that it's been published, and the purpose of the book is, I think one of the purposes is also to use it as a gift for others by donating the earnings to charities. But in making that happen, what were some of the ups and downs along the way, and how did you process those?
Well, they continue to this day. Now that, like you said, now the book's out there, I have the further challenge of promoting it, marketing it on like no budget, basically, and trying to get it out there to people and spread the light, literally. And that's actually, I would say, an even greater challenge than putting the book together. But along the whole journey so far, what I've realized is that I, with the ups and the downs, I just have to kind of go with it, and let a lot of it's about letting go. I realized at one point I was a bit attached to outcomes. I had this grand vision that I wanted to raise $1 million for the charities, and although I haven't given up on that vision, it's still a long way off the goal, to be honest. But I think it's also just having faith that magical things do show up when we follow our heart and when we live our passion. And even though it might not be happening as quickly as I'd want it to happen, because one of my big lessons here is patience, I kind of always carry around that faith with me. And again, it's like following the signs, because when I've been going through the very down spells, at those moments, they're the times when the white butterflies show up, or the number sequences that I mentioned, which I didn't actually get into, but it's the number 333 or 333, or even 3333. For some reason, those number sequences started showing up everywhere. And actually, one of the contributors to the book, who's now my partner, who I'm actually marrying on October the 11th, we had a Skype call one day about the book and some other things, and I looked at the time when we hung up, and we've been speaking for quite some time, and the time was 3 hours, 33 minutes, and 33 seconds that we've been speaking for. So it was things like that. I mean, this was after that I knew the 33 was a big number in some way for the book and some kind of sign, but they're the things that kept me going, to be honest. It was seeing those signs. If it hadn't have been for those, then I don't really know whether I would have persevered quite as long as I have. But I think the important thing to mention is that the signs are always around us, always around everyone. But it's about noticing the signs and opening up enough to notice them. And then when we notice them, not disregarding them, but actually thanking God for the signs, so that we actually then naturally attract more signs, because what we're grateful for, we get more of.
Katie, sorry, how do you say your name? Katie?
It's Kaidi.
Kaidi, sorry.
Yeah.
Kaidi, I was just curious to know, how have all these experiences that you just described, how do they reflect in your day-to-day life, and how do they, change the way you think or act, and if in any way, have you?
Well, yeah, they've very much changed the way I think in my everyday life. That's one of the beauties of them, actually, is that I'm now able to see things, I think, from a higher perspective in a lot of ways. You know, like, for example, when something isn't going quite the way I want it to go, I just know that it's for a reason now, whereas before I probably would have thought that I was doing something wrong, or, you know, why isn't this happening, and I would get frustrated with it. But now I just see that, you know, everything that happens on our journey is absolutely perfect for us. And sometimes something that we might want to happen yesterday hasn't happened yet, because we're not exactly where we need to be right then. And if that thing had happened when we wanted it to, it might not have really turned out in a really good way. Whereas if we just wait and be patient, when that blessing or that thing does show up, then we know that that's exactly the place it was meant to. I think it's just that whole thing of that everything happens in divine timing. And of course, God knows us better than anyone else knows us. And in that case, it's just the whole trust thing. I think trust has been a key word throughout all of this for me, you know, just very much knowing that what he knows best, and so let's like just go with it rather than trying to control everything.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Hi, this is Vinya calling in. I had just switching gears a little bit on this conversation. It's been going great. Thank you so much, Kairi. My question has to do with a conversation I was having with my friends yesterday over dinner. We were just talking about how in our workplace sometimes, you know, those of us who are like in a regular 9-to-5 job, how it could be a little challenging to align our values in that setting or to hold space for your coworkers. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. What would be some of your advice or, you know, insight into holding our values and principles in different environments, especially when you are working with different kind of people who come in with their own value sets and principles?
Well, I feel that it's important to have respect for everybody's different values, and know that they're, even though it might not be that they're the same kind of values that we have, that they're exactly where they're meant to be on their journey and on their path. And so, yeah, I feel it is very important to hold a sacred space for everybody in life, including our co-workers. I mean, when I'm up against somebody who I feel their energy isn't quite in alignment with my own in some way, what I tend to do is I not only surround myself in white light, but I also imagine the person I'm speaking to being surrounded in white light. And often I will just ask, literally just ask for the light to come in and surround, fill and protect us. And then in that time, that's when things start to flow a lot easier, because it's like the light is there with us. I mean, obviously it's all around us anyway, all the time. But I think when we actually call it in, there's a stronger power that comes in there, and everything then just feels to be more perfect with that outcome.
So, you know, I love your analogy of the light. It's so beautiful. How would we cultivate faith? Because sometimes we don't even recognize that we have that light, you know? We're completely lost in our own thoughts of, I don't know, we're just lost in our own web of thoughts, and we don't even recognize the fact that we have this light and and others have this light. So do you have any thoughts on how we can cultivate faith in just knowing our inner self and our inner light?
Well, you know, for me that happened in a quite a sudden way when, you know, I told the story about the healing sessions that I had, and that really did shift something in me. When it comes to others, I think it's difficult to say in a way, because I think we're all very much unique, and that light, you know, is present within each one of us, and obviously it resides in our spiritual heart, so in a way that's the kind of clue. I think it's just to always remember, as we're going through life, just to remember that we are love and we are light. So that which we are, you know, then it becomes much easier to see others as that as well. And I think even just with that awareness, that can be enough to trigger that light even more, so that it just grows and grows, and the flame expands and lights others as well.
Hi, this is Audrey. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us so far. It's been really interesting. And also congratulations on your upcoming wedding. I had a question when you mentioned that. I've been attending a lot of weddings lately. And it's been really interesting to just see kind of, friends and family and the kind of relationships and ways that they view love. And I was just curious, you mentioned that you met your partner in a very interesting way, and I was curious, what does a relationship mean to you, and how do you view love in that sense with a partner?
Okay, I'm glad you've asked that question, actually, because the man I'm marrying might be a bit unusual to some of you, and not the actual man, but more the, he's actually quite a bit older than I am. He's 38 years older than me,
mm-hmm.
which may shock some people on the call. It's interesting you asked that question because, I've had to come up against a lot of judgment with the relationship. And I think that the way I see love now is very different. I'm aware that we're all souls. And so I'm able to see love in a very different way than I used to.
Mm-hmm. And what is that difference, or how do you see it different now?
Well, I think it's just knowing that, in the soul space, there is no age. And so in that sense, we are all kind of the same. And it's almost like I can see love now as being something more illogical. It's almost like for me, being with this man who's 38 years older than me, is very illogical. You know, you would look at it and you would think, well, why? and all these reasons would show up about, why perhaps that's not the best for you or for him. But then when love comes into the picture, that is so powerful that it's almost like, and actually he uses this phrase, which I very much like, it's like love does what love wants to do. And even though it might be that other people would look at it and think that's very strange or, that's kind of a bit way out there, I think it's just that whole sense again of following the heart. And for me, it's interesting that it came up and that we met the way we did through the book, because of the fact that the book's called The Light, and it was almost like another lesson in all that, in following my heart, and for him as well, being true. In fact, his chapter in the book is all about being true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So for him as well, it was almost like we were kind of living manifestation of what we were preaching.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's very different from romantic love.
Well, I just was, yeah, I suppose the romantic love comes into it as well, but it's more the fact that this love feels very pure and feels very much from source and feels very on a spiritual level more than a kind of base level, if you see what I mean. But that's just the way it's happened for me and for him. But I'm sure that love comes in so many different colors and shades, and so every love is perfect. Really, it's just about where people are on their journey and the lessons that we're here to learn. Because I know for me, I'd always been very worried going through life about what other people thought about me. I'd always be very self-conscious about that. And so for me, this whole relationship is a massive lesson in that, and learning to not worry about how people are judging, just to be true to me and to be true to what I want. So, that's how it happened for me. But I know it's very different for everybody when it comes to love.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was just wondering, I was just curious, there is always this, at least with me, there is these two sides, right? There is the heart and there is the head. And I was just curious to see, do you think you always follow your heart, or how do you respond when you have this conflict? Say some of your experiences, if your brain analyzes them, they would seem like they're not very logical. So how does your brain respond in such situations?
Well, I've been learning to do that as I go because that's still a challenge now sometimes. You know, like when I listened to my head when it came to the charity side of things, for example, it was my head that was like bursting and was coming up with all these reasons about why it couldn't be 100% for charity. And I can now recognize that more when it shows up. I can tell the difference more between the head or the ego, I suppose, and the pure sense of knowing that just sort of like feels a lot more peaceful. And when I feel that sense of peace with something, I know that's the true kind of calling and that's the true knowing, and to go with that. The head tends to kind of butt in really when it's not wanted. And it's a different voice. I almost kind of hear the head differently now, and it has a different vibration about it. You know, the vibration with the head is a lot more like just dense and very of the earth, whereas the sense of knowing in the heart is very light and for me just feels more like freedom than anything, rather than something like prison. I don't know whether that describes it very well, but that's just what kind of has come as you've asked that question. But I think that is a challenge definitely for most people, and I do know that meditating regularly and for quite lengthy periods of time really does help me to differentiate the head and the heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you just, I see what you're saying. I mean, you're following your intuition, how it feels like, right? Because you can the sensations tell you whether you feel heavy or you feel light, and I guess that's what you follow rather than trying to differentiate if it's your head or your heart, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's more about just the feeling and going with that feeling which feels the best.
We were thinking about, you know, how, like in the opening circle, we were all talking about different people who inspired us, and we wanted to hear from you about people from your journey who've inspired you and contributed to your inner transformation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wanted to answer it earlier, but I didn't know whether I should come on and do that with everyone else there. But again, I've had like a collection of people, and I suppose my mum is definitely one. I mean, I know we were talking a lot about different parents that have inspired us, but mine was definitely my mum, because she was always very loving to people, but also very, I don't know whether she really realised it, but she was very spiritual and would often come from a very spiritual perspective on things. But really, that was my early childhood. But then when I became a bit older, I suppose it started with the man that, where I did the healing sessions with. He was very inspiring to me, a man called Richard Waterbourne. And, you know, he had a chapter in the book, of course. And then from there, I just started meeting all kinds of inspiring people. I met an intuitive lady called Molly Ann Fairley, who was very inspiring to me. She kind of deals with past life things. She heals past life issues that people might have. And then I met Julie Chimes, who I mentioned earlier. She's a very good friend of mine now, and she actually is like a spiritual mentor to me in many ways. She's the lady that was almost stabbed to death that I mentioned in the call. And because of her experiences, which continue to this day, where she does often leave her body and go to different places and dimensions, she has an amazing sense of wisdom. And sometimes when we're talking, even when she just looks into my eyes, I just feel that she's actually looking into my soul. And she just carries a very high vibration, and I very much respect and listen to her, you know, her ideas on things. And she also helped to shape the book a lot as it progressed. You know, she was very involved with the creation of it. So, and the other one is my husband-to-be, who, you know, his name is Terry Tillman. He's in the book as well. But again, there's just so many ways in which, I think someone mentioned earlier about how their husband reflects them back. It's like looking in a mirror. and that's what I see when I look at Terry. There's so many reflections with the two of us, and I'm able to see, you know, sometimes why I am the way I am, because of the way he is. And so that's very enlightening to learn these kind of lessons by just being with somebody that you dearly love. So they're my main people of inspiration, for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kaidi. Do you still live with any fears? How do you respond to your fears?
Well, when you said that, the first thing that came into my head was that I really fear spiders, like hugely. Like big spiders. I just got a massive fear of one of them being anywhere near me. But I also fear dogs, actually, which is very strange. Not so much small ones, but big dogs with big teeth. And I don't even know where that came from, because I've never even been bitten by a dog. I don't know if I do really deal with those fears in any particular way. But, you know, those ones are a bit more, I don't know, they're kind of the fears that have been with me ever since I've been very young. And I've never even thought about trying to really confront them, to be honest. But I did have a fear. I've always had this big fear of public speaking, funnily enough. And I don't know whether you know the Infinite Love team on this call. I suppose some of you will probably be familiar with Infinite Love, the charity in McAllen. But they actually invited me to come and speak there. About a couple of months ago, I think it was. And I was absolutely petrified at that thought of standing on stage in front of a crowd of people. And actually, the way I confronted that was that I would actually imagine, you know, before I got there, I would imagine everything going amazingly. And I would imagine myself being on the stage and being very confident in front of the people. And I just kept on replaying that image in my head that I would be absolutely fine. And actually on the day, I did call in the light. You know, I asked the light to surround, feel and protect me. And I asked the light to give me guidance when I was on stage. And I did honestly feel like my body had been taken over for that time. And what was coming out was, just coming from source almost, really. So I think that, you know, what I've learned about fear is that it is just an illusion, and it's only us that are creating it. So it's very easy to decreate it and recreate what we do really want. And actually, now I don't have any fear of speaking, and it's almost like I enjoyed that experience so much that I'd love to do more of it.
And I just have, you know, one more question. Just hearing you throughout this call, I feel like you could almost become a life coach, or maybe an sparking your inner transformation coach for people. What is your vision moving forward with the Light Network, with the Light? What are your thoughts and hopes? And
I would love for the book to be, more widely recognised in different countries. Recently we sold the foreign rights to two publishing companies in China. So the book is going to be out in simplified Chinese and some other kind of Chinese. I can't remember the name of it now, but two different Chinese languages, which, you know, is amazing. And I'm really excited about that. So I would say that I'd love to get the book into other countries and other languages. In fact, I'd love to get it out in India at some point, because I think it would be very successful there, and I think it would actually help a lot of people there. So that's one of the things. I do still have the goal and the vision to raise $1 million for the charities. And it could be that that happens through a different book, because I'm also at the moment working on a couple of new books to do with the Light. One of them is more about the Light in the corporate world, about conscious capitalism and, you know, more like corporate social responsibility in big companies. And the other book I'm putting together is about people's experiences of Light, like major synchronicities people might have had, or divine transformation, awakening, things like that. If anybody's had any of those experiences and they'd like to be in the book, then by all means get in touch with me. I'd love to know your stories. But yeah, moving forward, that's really where I'm going at the moment, is concentrating more on bringing out more books and getting the light more widely known. Yeah, I have thought about maybe doing some coaching, but I feel like it will be more guided if that's meant to be. And as of now, it hasn't been particularly guided in that way. So I just, you know, see what happens with that. But I've learned not to really have too many expectations or too many goals, because it might not be that that's really what we're here to do. And I think the truth comes out naturally in its own time rather than trying to force it.
Okay. I guess we're running out of time. Kanchan, I don't know if there's time for one more question or if...
Yeah, I mean, you can go ahead and that's fine.
I was struck by what you just said. Did you say conscious capitalism or did you...
Yeah, I did say conscious capitalism, yeah.
What do you mean by conscious capitalism?
Well, I mean, there's just a big movement going on at the moment in the corporate and business arena where, companies are starting to be more conscious in their dealings. A lot of companies in the past have used slave labor and, they've really not really put people first before profit. So really, it's more about all that side of things, this big movement that's going on in the business world and trying to transform that from the inside out so that businesses get more involved with meditation, being more compassionate, all these sort of spiritual teachings and practices which can be shifted now into the business arena so that... because it's obviously a bit corrupt at the moment, I think we're all seeing. So I just love to contribute to that change that's going on right now.
Thank you so much, Katie.
Well, thank you for having me on here and for all of you for being the shining lights that you all are. Every single one of you is a gift. So it's been a pleasure to be here today.